So we have been talking for months and months about this question of who is a Jew, and we've had so many different perspectives. So today, we're finally going to settle down and look at this question through the Makoros of Halacha. That's going to be the perspective today. And what's interesting is that the person who is bringing us this perspective is a Baal Halacha, is a posek, and the perspective that he's bringing us is very traditional, even though this person, if you look at the great rabbinic luminaries over the 20th century, would be probably one of the most non-traditional, the most maverick, unusual, halachic decisors of the 20th century. And his name was Rav Shlomo Gorin. Rav Shlomo Gorin was a remarkable, inspirational, unique, controversial, and highly innovative rabbinic personality. There is another controversial and interesting rabbinic personality. His name is Rav Shagar. Zichron Levracha. Rav Shagar is a postmodernist Zionist thinker. Rav Shagar wrote an essay comparing the halachic approaches of Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria from Kfar HaRoeh, the founder of the Bnei Akiva movement, great religious Zionist leader, and Rav Shlomo Gorin, the late chief rabbi. And he noted how Rav Gorin's approach to halacha and halachic learning and the implementation of halacha was radically different than Rav Neria, and that Rav Neria represented the continuity of a more traditional rabbinic approach to the understanding and the application of halacha, whereas Rav Gorin was, in certain respects, an iconoclast, a maverick in his application of halacha. He was born in the early, he was born in 1917, in the family of Ger Hasidim, who moved to Kfar Hasidim in Israel in 1925, which was a religious settlement. And he was sent to Yerushalayim to study in the Chevron Yeshiva. We've spoken about Chevron before. It is a place that was attracting some of the most outstanding younger rabbinic personalities of the generation. It was, remember, that was the continuation of the Slabodka Yeshiva. We talked about that a lot when we spoke about Reb Chatzkel Sarna. He received smicha at the age of 17, and then he actually studied philosophy, mathematics in Hebrew University from 1940 until 1944. In addition to being a young rabbinic genius, his first publication was, I think it was at the age of 17, was on Chidushim of the Rambam. But then also in 1936, he joined the Haganah. He wrote, in addition, he wrote a work at the age of 21 on the laws of mikvah called Shaarei Tara. And he fought in the Haganah and Milchemet HaShechur, 1948. So he's a man of many different dimensions. And he was appointed as a brigadier general of the IDF. He was first appointed as a chaplain, then rising to the rank of brigadier general. And he himself trained and became an active soldier. He then became a general. He became the chief rabbi of the army. And he transformed the Israeli army experience using his halachic brilliance. And because he was known as a genius, as a young man. So he institutionalized many halachic principles in this new army and using his role. So whether it was establishing kashrus principles in the army or the observances of Yom Tov, he wrote several volumes of tshuvas. I have them at home. They're called, Meshiv Molchama. I forget now. Three volumes of tshuvas, of responsa, in dealing with practical army issues in light of halacha. How to integrate traditional halacha into a modern society and specifically into the modern army. He was, in 1968, he was elected chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, Yafo, and in 1973, he served as the chief rabbi of Israel until 1983. At the same time, this young genius who was involved in the army was also, I would say, somewhat of a maverick in his personal life. Well, for example, he married the daughter of the Nazir, Rav David Cohen, and became a vegetarian. Okay, not the most unusual thing, but he also created a unified nusach for the army. Because he says, we can't have everybody, this one davening nusach Sfar, this one davening nusach Ashkenaz. So this was controversial. He adjusted the prayer of Nachim after 1967. Because he said, in his view, Yerushalayim is not destroyed in the way that it's being described in the prayer. He had a very famous controversial case, which we're not going to get into today, that reflected his forcefulness and it was his initiative in halachic areas. It was called the Langer case. And it marked a substantial break between him and the rest of the majority of the Torah community, in which he ruled, and there was a secret Beis Din, which there's a lot of stuff going on here about which I'm not qualified to speak, and some of it probably constitutes Lashon Hara, so even if I were qualified to speak, I probably should not speak. But to understand that Rav Goren allowed two people, these two children of what seemed to be an illicit marriage, which would create the status of mamzerus for these children, to allow them to marry according to Israeli law, which was a big controversy at the time, it caused a tremendous rift in the Torah community. This is what led the late Rav Shlomo Yosef Elyashiv, the Gaon, one of the greatest Torah generation, leaders of the Torah generation, previous door, to leave the Rabbanut out of protest of Rav Goren, and it caused many other tragic ripple effects, including the way that people viewed Rav Goren, his other Piskei Halacha. It was a terrible, tremendous controversy. So Rav Goren was a complicated person. And he was an innovator. And at the same time, he saw himself as a staunch defender of Halacha and the application of Halacha in a complicated modern context. Part of what likely was driving him to find whatever heter he could in the Langer case was the push from the other side of the political spectrum that if the rabbinic authorities weren't going to figure out something for this couple, these two couples, then they were going to institute civil marriage in Israel, which he thought was a terrible abrogation of halacha. So there was this push-pull in which he was innovating but still feeling the sense of fealty. So for all of Rav Goren's great innovations and controversial Piskei Halacha, his letter to Ben-Gurion represents arguably the most traditional, conservative, standard approach to a halachic issue that you will find. And that's what I'd like to share with you. That interestingly, of all the letters of the people that wrote to Ben-Gurion, everybody says it's known, it's well known who is a Jew and who is not a Jew. So Rav Goren says, well, let's look at the sources. Let's go to the book. So he writes Ben-Gurion, and that's why we're not going to go through the whole letter. He writes Ben-Gurion, God bless him, 1, 2, 3, like 8 pages, a whole shir klali on who is a Jew. The second half is, okay, now that we know who is not a Jew, what are the laws of conversion? So you have Mila, you have Tevila, you have Kabbalah Sol Mitzvahs. So he goes through all the Mar Makomos, all the details of conversion. We're not going to do that today. That's a whole nother shir. But what I'd like to share with you is I just pulled the Mar Makomos from Rav Goren's letter, and I put them on the sheets here. For those who are online, let's see if we can pull them up for you. Don't say I never did anything nice for the people on Zoom, all right? Let's not. Here we go. Oh, no, this is not it. Let's see if I can find it. So we're just going to go through al regel achas, not all the things, but almost all the Mar Makomos that Rav Goren gives us here. All right, you'll tell me, all the folks who are online, you'll tell me if you can see. Can you see? Can you see the Maror Makomos? Yes. Okay, great. So Rav Goren says, let's start with the Mishnayos. Let's start with Torah Shebal Peh, and then we're going to move to Torah Shebichsav. The Mishnah says in Kiddushin, source number one, V'chol mi she'ein lo lo olo v'lo al achirim Kiddushin. Any person, any man who does not have, or any woman in this case, not have on him or on others Kiddushin, Havlad, the offspring, Kemosa, follows her. When you have a union that two people create a child, but those two people are not subject to the covenant of Kiddushin. What is Kiddushin? Right? There are two steps, actually, in a Jewish marriage. There is Kiddushin, or Erisin, and Nisuin. It is the halachic creation of a marriage. And that bond, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Andre Neher, we spoke about the Napoleonic Sanhedrin. One of the issues that the Napoleonic Sanhedrin dealt with was intermarriage. Napoleon was interested in figuring out, can Jews marry Stam French people? All right, how are you going to answer that to Napoleon? So the answer is, I'm not going to tell you whether Jews can marriage, can't, but whatever. That's not the issue. Here's the story. They said to Napoleon, look, you know, France is the eldest daughter of the church. How would the church feel about creating a religious union between members of its own faith and people who don't have the same set of assumptions? How can you create a religious institution with one party that doesn't subscribe to the principles of that religion? So what they said was, they said to Napoleon, look, the Catholic Church isn't interested in doing that. We have something called Kiddushin. Kiddushin is a formal religious construct. You can't create a construct if not both parties are buying into that construct. So it's not really a question of can Jews marry non-Jews. There's no such thing as Kiddushin for two people who don't have the same set of assumptions. So therefore, when you have a mixed marriage where you have one party and another party who are not from the same faith community, that's not Kiddushin. That's not a halachic union. So what do you do in that case where there's not all of v'lo alachem Kiddushin? That person, the non-Jewish person, whether it's the husband or the wife, there is no Kiddushin. So the Mishnah says, Havlad Kemosa. The offspring follows the woman. Ve'ezazeh, what is that? What are we talking about? Zeh Vlad, this is the offspring. Shivcha Vinachris. You see it on the screen, everybody? Can you see here, source number one? Shivcha Vinachris, of a non-Jewish maidservant or a non-Jewish woman. So Rashi explains right here on the page. Says Rashi, Havlad Kemosa, source number two, Vlad Nachris, the offspring of a non-Jewish woman, even if they had whatever ceremonial process, whatever Sheva Brachas, whatever party, whatever ring, doesn't matter. Vlad Nachris, Nachri. The offspring of a Nachris, of a non-Jewish woman, is a non-Jew, is a Gentile. V'im Giruhu, if they converted the child, which is the later part of Rav Goren's letter, Havi Ger Kosher V'eino Mamzer, that person is a kosher ger. They're not a mamzer. Mamzer means somebody who was born of an illicit union from which there could have been Kiddushin. Two Jewish people who are forbidden to each other. The creation there is a mamzer, but here the creation is a ger. Nothing wrong. Similarly, Rav Goren says, Rav Goren has tremendous, tremendous bikias. Because he's a genius mind, if you ever learn any of Rav Goren's svarim, Torah Samoadim, or his Shuvas, he quotes from, he just marshals sources from everywhere. Well, I'll just interject with one more little maisa. My Rebbe from Yoredeya, from Grus, my Rebbe, Rav David Miller, so he's the head of the Grus Kolo, Rav Miller is the head of the Reitz Kol in Yerushalayim. So when we were in Grus, that's where I learned Yoredeya. So Mecham and I were first married. We lived in Grus. Rav Miller was giving Yoredeya shiurim for my smicha. So he told us that when he came to Israel, he made aliyah but he only had smicha from Ritz. He didn't have smicha from the Rabbanut. So apparently at that time, when he came out Aliyah, he had a bechina. It must have been, you know, in this period, I think it was in the late 70s, he had a bechina with Rav Goren to just confirm that he knew something. So Rav Goren said, you have smicha, so why don't we review the Talmud Yerushalmi on Chulin? And Rav Miller was like, who learns the Talmud Yerushalmi on Chulin? Like, I just learned Yerodea. So he said to Rav Goren, he's like, I didn't learn the Talmud Yerushalmi. Rav Goren was like, okay, so let's learn the sugya of Chal, which is, I think, Simid Sadi in Yerodea. I can tell you, I learned this in Yerodea, and Rav Miller learned this in Yerodea. Most people have no idea what's going on in Chal. I certainly don't. Chal is an udder. And so there are unbelievably complicated halachos about the kashrus of an udder, because the meat part is meat and the milk part is dairy. And how do you create a kosher udder, and how do you cut it, and what are the permutations of this? And Rav Goren was like, yeah, let's just talk about chal. Like, can you imagine somebody walks into your office one day and it's like, yeah, let's talk about the most intricate Yerodea topic you could ever possibly imagine. That's where Rav Goren was. So he's going to marshal in this letter, he's just going to marshal sources, just one after the next, after the next. And he just lines them up from Ben-Gurion, like, here are your marmakomos. Says the Gemara. The Gemara, let's finish this Gemara. This is the Gemara, this is in Kiddushin, this is the context, if you see on source number 3. The Gemara says, V'lada kamosa min olan. How do you know that the Vlad, the offspring, follows the mother? To Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Ha'isha v'ladeha, the woman and her children. In the case of a non-Jewish and Shifcha Kananis, Tiel Adonel should belong to the master. So that's true. You see, the children follow the mother. Nachris minolon, how do you know about a non-Jewish woman? Omar Kra, the Pasuk says, Lo sischatin bum, you should not marry them. Now, this line, Lo sischatin bum, has a lot more to unpack. We're not going to do it today. The prohibition against intermarriage is complicated. This pasuk is said specifically in the context of the Shiva Amim in the 7 Canaanite nations, but the Gemara is using it more generally here. So the Gemara says, yeah, Ashkachna, second line, Ashkachna, I see delotafsiba kiddushin, vladakamosim inolan. I understand that you're not allowed to marry them, and that the implication of the Gemara is that there is no marriage contract between you, but how do you know that the child follows the mother? So Amreb Yochanan, Bisham Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, says the Helega Reb Yochanan, in the name of the Helega Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, Da'amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Ki Yosir es Bincha Me'acharai. If your daughter goes to marry some non-Jew, some Gentile, he will cause that child to stray from me. Bin Chahabam Yisraela, says the Gemara, your son who comes from a Jewish woman, Karoi Bincha, is called your son. Ve'ein Bincha Habam Ina Ovedes Kochavim, Karoi Bincha Ela Bina. But the child that comes from a woman who is Ovedes Kochavim, then it's called her child, not your child. So this is the first sugya, the Gemara in Kiddushin. Says Rav Goren, take a look here in source number 4. Here's also a Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Chaf Beis. Mi sheyesh lo ben mikol makom. There is a din that if a man, Rachmana Litzlan, is married and his wife has no children and he passes away, that the wife, that's right, the wife, but what if the man has a child? So then there's no yibum. So what if the man has a child and the child is from a non-Jewish woman? So the Gemara says, Yish yesh lo ben mikol makom poter eishes aviv min hayibum. A man who has a son from any place paters his father's wife from yibum. V'chayev ha-malkas v'kil laso. And God forbid a child who hits or curses their parent would be chayev misa. That child follows the parent. U'beno l'chol davar. And is their child for everything? Chutz! Except, Mimi Sheyesh Lo Ben, somebody who has a son, Min HaShivcha, from a non-Jewish maidservant, Umino Veres Kochavim, or from a non-Jewish woman. So Rav Goren says, we have a Beferish Gemara. Ben-Gurion, you have a Shaila. What to do with the children of mixed marriages? So he says, it's 2 Beferish Gemaras. Well, the Gemara never tells you in the end of the book, it never says like, okay, so this is the summary of the laws. It's just there's a lot of conversation. Sometimes it says Hilchasa like this, but how do you know how to codify what it says in the Gemara? So therefore, the Rambam came along and says, I'm going to do you a favor. I'm going to codify for you all the laws according to their topic. Because the Rambam says the Gemara is an amazing journey in learning, but it's very complicated. The Rambam also was a taxonomist. The Rambam was a very systematic thinker in a certain similar way to like the Greek organized mathematical perspective.
He was a scientist.
He was a physician. So he says, I'm going to organize it for you in a more systematic way. Terrific. So the Rambam says, let me organize it for you. And I'll tell you in two places. The first one is on your page in source number 5, the Rambam in Hilchos Issurei Bia, Laws of Relationships. Ze HaKlal, this is the rule. Heretzi, focus. This is the rule. Ben haba min ha'eved, o min ha'akum, o min ha'shivcho, min basakum. A child that comes from a non-Jewish father, whether it's non-Jewish because the father is a Gentile or is a non-Jewish servant, or the mother is non-Jewish or she's a female servant, hare hu ki'imo, it follows the mother. Ve'ein mashgichin al ha'av, you do not look at the father. Period. Period. The Rambam then goes on to explain how you can use this to help in a case where there is a mamzer, to find a way for that mamzer to ultimately get back into the Jewish people based on specific rules about mamzerim and gerim. But this is an unequivocal psak of the Rambam, and similar in number 6, same Rambam, same font, different halacha. This is in Yibam v'chalitza. Avo beno min ha'shivcha min ha'nachris eino poter shezera haba min ha'shivcha avodim v'haba min ha'goyim v'ragoya Goyim uki'ilu einam. So says Rav Gorin, it's a Beferish Rambam, that the child of a non-Jewish woman is not Jewish. Then Rav Gorin says, let's look at the root of this idea in Tanakh, in Torah Shebichsav. He says, I'll tell you a story. The story appears in the Sefer, the book of Ezra, Perek Yud, Pasuk Beis. You know, Ezra came back on the Aliyah from Bavel, and it was not so simple. Unfortunately, there were only, I think about 43,000 and change people who came back on the Aliyah. You know, they had the opportunity to come back and build the second base of Mikdash, but most people stayed home. Stayed home in Bavel. They didn't come. And even the people that came, it wasn't exactly, you know, the it wasn't the, you know, the distinguished chevra who were here learning Sunday morning, learning Torah, committed, inspired, amazing, right? Not exactly. Not exactly. Ezra looks around at these people and he says to them, Vayan Shchanya ben Yechim ibn Elam, Vayom al Ezra, they say to Ezra, the people say, look, Rebbe, we have to tell you the truth. Anachnu ma'alnu velokenu. We betrayed our God. Vanoshev noshim nochrios me'am haaretz, and we married non-Jewish women. Va'ata yesh mikvah Yisrael alzos. Is there any hope? Is there any purification? Is there any future? You know what says the pasuk in Gimel? Let's do this. Va'ata nichras bris lelokenu. Let's build a covenant. Let's come back to the Rebbe Shalom. He's waiting for us. He wants us to be with him. So you know what we're going to do? Lahotzi, we're going to take out Kol Nashim, all of these non-Jewish wives. We're going to end the intermarriage. So it's just parenthetically important to note that there's no such thing, Ein Chadash Tachas HaShamash. There's no such thing as a new problem. The problems of intermarriage, they're as old as the Tanakh. The problems of focusing during davening and being, you know, all these problems. So we're just trying to mimisake. But what does it say, lahotzi kol nashim, to remove all the women? And then what does it say next? What does it say after lahotzi kol nashim in Pasuk Gimel? That's right. V'hanolad mehem, and those born to them, their offspring. So why are they telling them to separate out the offspring of the non-Jewish women? That's it. That's it. Because they're not Jewish. Says Rav Gorin. That's what it says in the Pasuk.
It's clear. It's
Beferish. So what happened? The end of that chapter, when they, it's interesting, for posterity in the Tanakh, every name of the family who was intermarried is pointed out name by name for the rest of this parak until the end. Kol Eile, Nasu Nashim Nachrios, all these people were intermarried. V'yesh mehem Nashim v'yosimu banim. And they have women and children. What does it mean, v'yesh mehem banim? So look at Rashi in source number 8. Since they had Nashim and the women were not Jewish, they took out the women and the children because the children were not theirs. And then Rav Goren pulls out a Talmud Yerushalmi. We mentioned how Rav Goren was an expert in Yerushalmi. Let's see if I can scroll up to see if you could see this on the screen. Here you go. Source number 9. The story, this is a story between Ish Yaakov, this man of Kfar Guvraya, and Atun She'elon Le Mau Lemigzar Bra Da'armiyasa B'Shabbos. What about circumcising a child Da'armiyasa of a non-Jewish woman on Shabbos? Can you do a bris for a non-Jewish child on Shabbos? And the Gemara in that Rishalmi goes on to say how they said that's crazy. Absolutely not. And it quotes this pasuk in Ezra. Why not? Because to do a bris on a non-Jewish child, that's a milah l'shem geirus, for conversion. That's right. You don't do it on Shabbos. You only do a bris milah on Shabbos for a Jewish child. So the Yerushalmi says, what are you talking about? Of course not. Rav Goren brings one more interesting raya. Well, two more interesting rayas from Tanakh. Look at this one. This is very interesting. It's a pasuk in Shmuel. You see here on source number 10, Va'ani ona olech escherpasi. Where will I take my shame? Va'ata tia ka'achana nevolim. And you will be like one of the shamed, one of the dregs of society. Va'ata daberna el ha-melech. Speak to the king. Ki lo yimna'eni mimecha. He will not withhold me from you. When kids are in day school, at least years ago, they used to have a game in class. They would say, Mi Amar El Mi. Who said to whom? You remember this? Mi Amar El Mi, right? So I want to play that game right here. Mi Amar El Mi. Who said this thing to whom? Someone, in this case it's a woman, is saying to a man, don't do this to me right now. Do not do this, because you will be a vagabond, you will be like a novel, and where will I take my shame? Speak to the king, and he will not refuse us from marrying. He will let me, you have me. Mi Amar El Mi. Anybody online, anybody can guess, Mi Amar El Mi, who said this to whom? Who said this to whom? Someone's got to unmute and see if you can figure this out. Who said this to whom?
Tamar.
Yes! Mi Amar El Mi! Yes! Awesome! Tamar. That's right. Tamar. Tremendous Bekias!
Is there a king then?
Ah, who's Tamar? Tamar, the daughter of? Who was the king? Of David.
Right.
Tamar, the daughter of David. Who was being coerced from Amnon. Right? The second Tamar. Right. So Amnon is trying to take advantage of this woman. And she says, don't do this. Don't do this. My life will be destroyed if you take advantage of me. And what's going to happen to you? Right? We know what happened to him. But then she says, don't violate me. Ask the king and we can marry. So can I ask you a question? How could she propose to Amnon, who is her brother, that they could marry? What's she trying to say? Lo yimna'eni mimecha. Speak to the king. He will not refuse me from coming to you.
What is she talking about? What does that mean? Says Rashi, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, source 11, Shemuteres ani lach lecha. I'm allowed to marry you. I were siblings. Lefishinis abra bi'imi kishihi nachris. Because my mother was not Jewish when King David was with her, because she was a yifas toar shalakha David b'melchama. She was a woman in this category of Eishes Yifas Toar, so she was not Jewish. So there's no, that's right, there's no legal relationship between us. And therefore they can marry. So Rav Goren says, it's a story in Tanakh. And one more makar, he quotes from the Tanakh in Sefer Malachi. In the Bolak book of Malachi, Perek Beis, Bogda Yehuda v'toeva nesa b'Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. Something horrible, a treacherous act of begida was committed. Ki chilal Yehuda kodesh Hashem asher oev. Yehuda was mechalal the kodesh of Hashem. Uboal bas el nechar. The Yehuda, the Jewish people, we, Boal bas el nechar, we consorted with the daughter of a foreign god. We intermarried. And just parenthetically, whatever the technical legal prohibition of intermarriage is, which we could figure out, where do you find the pasuk? Is it Los Eschatim Bam? Is it somewhere else? But the Torah considers that a begida, a breach of a covenant. It's not about, where's it saying Shulchan Aruch you're not allowed to be intermarried? It's because your choice is choosing, you're opting out of a Jewish future, of a connection with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's so painful. So what does the next pasuk say? Yachris Hashem la'ish asher ya'asena. God cuts off for the person, the man who does this. The man who does this. Er va'ona me'ole Yaakov. What is er va'ona? Says the Ibn Ezra, source 13. Ben v'neched. A child and a grandchild. So Rav Goren says, look at all these sources. Look at the Torah Shebal Peh. Look at the Torah Shebichsav. David, the Helig of Ben Gurion. I have to give you a shtickle shear. This is it. So then Rav Goren says, oh, we have to make sure that we cover all the marmakomos, because sometimes in halacha you'll find strange shitos, unusual shitos. So one of them he quotes is the Knesset HaGedola. This Rav Chaim Ben Aviste's commentary on the tour, on the Arba tour of Yaakov and Asher. So he has a suggestion, Rav Chaim Ben Aviste, who says, maybe if you have a child from a mixed marriage where the mother is not Jewish, and then the child converts, when the child converts, he then is connected to his father. That's the Chiddush of the Knesset HaGedola. I looked at the Knesset HaGedola. He doesn't explain it very carefully. It's in the it's in Choshen Mishpat and Siman Zayin. It's not so clear, but that's what the Knesset HaGedola says. So first of all, Rav Goren says, even according to that Knesset HaGedola, the child is not Jewish till they convert. That's Aleph. And Beis, he says, all the Achronim reject that Knesset HaGedola. That's number one. He says, number two, there is an interesting source in the Ramah. Rav Moshe Isserles from Krakow, the great rabbinic authority in Ashkenaz in the 17th century. The Ramah has an interesting comment. And this comment of the Ramah has bearing on our discussion. Because we said at the beginning, two major sugyas, Kiddushin and Yevamos, marriage and Yibum, were relevant to this issue of figuring out whether children of non-Jewish mothers are Jewish. We said, first was, are they Jewish? And second was, for purposes of Yibum, that child, if let's say the father had a child, then the mother, whose husband just passed away, would not have to do Yibum. So we said, well, the father's child from a non-Jewish woman doesn't count. But look at this Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch says, this is in source 14, the last page in the Marmakomos. I'll read it out to you. So now the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Evanezer and Hilchos Ishus is talking about a related topic about siblings that my sister is prohibited to me minat Torah, whether that sister is because we share a father or we share a mother, bein achos me'anusun, bein me'aznus, whether that sister is my sister, whether or not the parents' relationship was from marriage or from an extramarital relationship, even if it's from an incestuous relationship, a sister is a sister. Except for what kind of sister? A person whose father was living with two women. One was Jewish, the other one was not Jewish. And the father has a son from the Jewish mother and a daughter from the non-Jewish woman. Says the Shulchan Aruch, technically, the brother can marry the sister. Why? They share the same father. How can this boy marry this girl? What's that? Because she's not Jewish, and if she converts, they're not related. They're not related at all. They're not related. Exactly. Another example, the Tamar case. Exactly. And it's just trying to explain the case of Tamar, how it was that David HaMelech, the great tzaddik, how did he live with this woman? She was Eshet Tzifas Torah. The Gemara says that's what the assumption was. That's how he was allowed to live with her. Fine. So now the Ramah says something, and this will pique your interest. Hagah. Whenever you see Hagah on the Shulchan Aruch, that's a gloss from Rav Moshe Isserles on Rav Yosef Karo. Venerally, I think, D'lechatchila aser lavo alav. Lechatchila, this boy should not marry his quote-unquote sister. V'yesh mistapkin lomar, and there are those who are in doubt to say, D'dafka mi d'oraisa, only from the Torah, havlad holech achar ha-shivcha v'achar oved eskochavim, we follow matrilineal descent. Avol mi d'rabbanon, but from a rabbinic perspective, havezaro, it is the son of that father. Lechein, therefore, yesh lahachmir lechatchila. You should be machmir and not marry that woman.
The flip side of that, of course, with Ben Gurion, then that's patrilineal descent.
Oh, so wait a second. So says Rav Gorin, you might know this Ramah, right? What about this Ramah? New? What are you going to say? What are you going to say? So you're going to say two things. The first thing is that all the Achronim here, they disagree with this Ramah. If you look on the side, the Chalkas Mechokek and others, they say, I don't know what Suffolk is. He says, no one in their life ever heard of this idea. So I have here, I put on the Marmakomos, it's number 15, the Bir Hagra, the Gon of Vilna. He says, Svuki Eini Odea Mahi. I don't know what kind of doubt this is. It's a Beferish Mishnah that we said, that there's nothing. V'chein Kasa Beishmuel. Everybody agrees. There's nothing to talk about. Now there is a Likut. The Likud of the Gra is where they collected his notes, and he quotes that there is a Yalkut, there is a Medrash, and the Medrash has a Pirish on it called the Zayas Ranon. Zayas Ranon, in the third line here, that's Zion Reish, he's referencing the Zayas Ranon, and he says, that's the source of the Ramah. The Zayas Ranon's Hezber for the Yalkut Shimoni. He says, but I'm telling you, if you look in the Pshat in that Yalkut Shimoni, the Zayas Ranon is wrong, there's no source for this either. So the Vilna Gaon says, I'll tell you what the source is. It's the Zayas Ranan's comment on the Yalkut Shimoni, and it's wrong. But Rav Gorin says one step further. Forgetting the fact that all the Achronim disagreed with this Ramah. Did the Ramah say that this is a two-way street of patrilineal descent? In Halacha, we have a Chumrah sometimes in a direction and a Kula in a different direction. Sometimes one person's status could be a chumrah for one person and a kula for another person.
There's two opinions.
Two opinions, sometimes. But sometimes we are just adding a chumrah in a one direction, in one way. The Ramah said, Minat Torah, this child of a non-Jewish mother is not Jewish. Period, end of story, sof pasuk. The Ramah says, oh, that status would have a lot of stringencies because they're not Jewish, but it would have also a potential leniency. All the Ramah is saying is, we're not going to give you the leniency.
And actually, something you said earlier, you said, okay, that union, it's that the guy, the son, is a ger.
So could become a ger if he wanted to.
So in this case, right, so in this case, he's saying he's taking that option. I mean, so it's only patrilineal if there's a conversion, which means he's not born a Jew. So it's really supporting it anyway. It's a side case, but it doesn't contradict the main case.
Oh, so the only thing is that I think what the Ramah would be saying here is that midrabanon, we have to worry that he didn't even need to convert. And that he would be considered Jewish because of patrilineal descent. So what Rav Goren says is, he says, read the Ramah carefully. The Ramah is not saying that we would ever consider somebody whose mother was not Jewish. We would never, ever consider them Jewish. Never. It's just that if their father was Jewish, we would add a chumrah on the side of giving them a Jewish status. But we would never think that that person was actually Jewish.
So, but in that case, the child is still not Jewish.
Correct.
If the father was a Jew and the mother's not Jewish, the vlad is not
Jewish. Is not Jewish. All you would add is a chumrah that if that person would convert, that woman would not be able to marry the man who was her brother. Or if he was a man, he would not be allowed to marry his sister. That's all that's adding. So Rav Goren is saying, look, we have to be intellectually honest. You have to scan all the makoros. You have to look through all of the sources and figure out, ma yesh. Is there a strange shita out there? And that's where, coming back to some of the more interesting things in Rav Goren's life, in the case of the Langer controversy, he was trying to find some source, some way to, within the confines of halacha, even in his innovative application. But it's interesting how with Ben-Gurion, you see, this is a traditional, systematic approach to a halachic question. Rav Goren says, I have a halachic question. I need to look at the Gemara. I need to look at the Mishnayos. I find the precedents in Tanakh to support it, to fill out the picture. I look in the Shulchan Aruch. It says what it says, Beferish. I'm going to look in the Achronim. And that's how we're going to lead our lives. I'm going to end with one Maisa, just because it's such a fantastic Maisa. And it speaks to just the colorful nature of Rav Goren's life. Rav Goren literally single-handedly liberated Chevron and the Ma'ara Samachpela. It's a Maisa Shaya Kachaya. Exactly what it was. So many of us are familiar with the iconic picture of Rav Goren standing at the Kotel blowing the shofar. Remember, he was a general in the army, so he had a military access. He had a jeep and a driver. So he's running around with a Torah, boom, he's blowing the shofar, he's all over the place. He heard, because of his military connections, he heard that they were going to go the next day to Kever Rachel and to Hebron. So he told his driver shortly thereafter, to be awakened in the morning, early in the morning, and to take him to Hebron. Because he heard that the IDF was going to go to Hebron. So he gets up early, he tells the driver, we got to go to Hebron. So he goes to Hebron, but meanwhile, he did not know that Hebron had not yet been conquered by the IDF. He pulls up in his jeep in the morning, and all he sees in Hebron hanging from the streets are white sheets. Surrender. Now remember, where did Rav Goren learn in the 1920s? He learned in the Hebron Yeshiva. What happened in 1929? There was a massacre in Hebron. This was not lost on everyone. So it's quite possible that the residents, the Arab residents of Hebron, they knew that Jews have a long memory, and they were concerned that when the IDF rolls into Hebron, you know exactly what's going to happen. So before the IDF gets there, Rav Goren shows up with all they see, with surrendering Arabs. He drives to the Ma'ara Samachpela, where Jews have been denied entry for hundreds of years, and he blows the shofar. The problem is the Ma'ara is locked. So what does he do? He takes his Uzi, he has a submachine gun, and he blows the door, the lock off the door, and he comes in. And it's from that moment that Jews have the opportunity, the ability, and the zchus to daven in Maariv HaMachpelah. Exactly as he had done the day before at the Kotel with the shofar, he's blowing the shofar again. It's all because of Rav Goren. It's unbelievable. So this very unusual, colorful person made many, many contributions. But at the same time, what I wanted to share with you was how there was an element, there was a traditional halachic element, even with all of his innovation, that he wanted to share with Ben-Gurion to explain to him, how do we determine as Jews who is a Jew? The rest of the article, the letter, he makes this suggestion that maybe what should we do with children who are not yet converted? Maybe we should call them, like it says in the Megillah, mityahadim. Mityahadim, waiting to become Jewish. A new category. But as a matter of principle, Rav Goren said, if you are not born from a Jewish mother, you're not Jewish. You could go through then the processes of conversion, which is exactly the next part of the shiur, right? That's what he gives the next part. But as a matter of principle, Rav Goren is sticking to the traditional halacha, but he feels it's necessary to give Rav Goren, to give Ben-Gurion, and for perpetuity, this shiur klali, which is what we went through today. So